Today on The Independent, Pete and I talk about Pete's Notre Dame fan survey on The Athletic as we break down what you're most excited about with Marcus Freeman and the Irish, both this season and moving forward.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson in South Bend, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna in Chicago. And Matt, you mentioned it in the quick intro there. Notre Dame fan survey is an annual rite of summer. It's kind of one of those things where you get the feedback to the level of like, this is one of my favorite things you do all year. And I'm like, well, it's June. The football season is kind of fun too. Hopefully there's something good then. But at about almost 2,400 responses to it. And if anything, the enthusiasm for this season showed in the number of people that participated, because that was up like 25% from the year before. But yeah, if you wanted to see optimism in written form, the Notre Dame fan survey was the place to find it, because I think my readership at The Athletic, certainly our listenership at The Independent, a lot of good vibes, both in terms of where this season can go. And I think probably enough people listen to it and read our stuff to know that I think the NIL answer was reflected in a like, oh yeah, Notre Dame's actually doing a nice job with that. But yeah, as you went through that survey, I'm not going to ask you to fill it out as we record. But
I may or may not have. I mean, I have a subscriber now. I'm not
okay. Well, that's good. That's good. But yeah, what was the biggest takeaway from the survey for you?
The overall level of optimism about pretty much everything was hard to ignore. I think I don't know if you put this in past years. If you did, it didn't garner the responses that this year's did, and probably with good reason. But reading, and I'm sure you had plenty you didn't print, but you know, what would winning a national championship mean to you?
Yeah, 40,000 words, so I couldn't put all.
Okay, this thing's got to be a bear to put together, right?
Oh my God.
Going through all of it.
The write-in answers, you got to keep those to a minimum. But my favorite thing about the survey is the last question. I think last year's was, tell me your origin story for becoming a Notre Dame fan. And like, those were awesome. I didn't think these would be as good, but they really were. So the question was, imagine Notre Dame wins a national championship. What would it mean to you, and how would you celebrate it? The variety and alcohol that would be consumed,
and really, cigars,
really phenomenal. I mean, we're talking everything from Dom Perignon to Redbreast, Veuve Clicquot. I mean, really, Guinness was all over the place, but, hams, I think. So yeah, there was a lot of good stuff in there, for answer number 20.
I love this one. I'd send a gift basket to Baton Rouge filled with items I picked up while shopping down a different aisle. That was a good one, too. Because I wasn't sure where it was going when I started with the Baton Rouge. But those were really good answers. Like, a lot of, like, not to get sentimental about it, but, like, it's why we're all romantic about sports and football and our favorite team. Like, I remember when the Cubs did win it in 16, and obviously that was a bigger drought than this, but I had a lot of Cubs fans in my family, and I was working at ESPN at the time. I remember someone saying, hey, Matt, you should go to a graveyard the next day and write about just what you see. And it was a great idea. And I pitched it to my editor, and they're like, Wright Thompson's already doing that. So I knew it was a good idea, because Wright Thompson did it. But like, I imagine it would be similar with Notre Dame. We saw it with NC State and Jimmy V's grave when they made the Final Four this year. That was definitely the most enjoyable part to read. And I mean, let's not beat around the bush here. I think there's a reason you included that question in this year's survey. Like, they got a chance this year. Like,
yeah,
I'm not saying they didn't have a chance in previous years, but they're going to go into this year, I guess I'd say favored in 11 of 12 games, because as we record this, they're underdog to Texas A&M. But they're a team that should win most, if not all, of their games this year. And if you do that, you're in position to win a national championship. So I think Notre Dame fans could rightfully dream big going into this year. And in the big picture, as was illustrated through the responses, there's a level of optimism about the direction of this program right now in a way that I'm not sure I've ever seen. And maybe, you know, in the emotions of the moment after 2012 or after 2020 or some other memorable year, you're certainly excited. But right now it does seem like, you know, in the middle of the summer when you're kind of, you know, not excited, but, you know, there's not a whole lot going on. You're looking at this season and this program and this regime and thinking, all right, we're all rowing the boat in the same direction. We're all on the same page. We got a new facility coming. We have a favorable schedule this year. NIL seems to be in a much better place than it was in years past. Let's dream big, because why not?
Yeah, that was – so one of the parts of the survey that I really like doing is sort of comparing, like having the same question for multiple years, so you sort of get like a baseline of data. And so one of those questions every year is, what's the regular season record going to be? And 11-1 got, I think, 55% of the vote, maybe. I think maybe it was a little bit more than that. But I mentioned that because 11-1 has never been, it got 64% of the vote. 11-1 has never been the leading vote getter for the record question. So like there's always summer optimism, right? Like I do this in June every year. 10-2 has always been the leading vote getter by, it's always captured at least 50% of the vote. This year, 10-2 got 25% of the vote. So yeah, year over year, this is the most optimistic the Notre Dame fan base has been since I started doing this survey. And that's not to say like they're any more confident in Marcus Freeman now than they were last year or the year before, or they like him anymore. They would evaluate the program as being in better shape now than it was. But the optimism now is definitely peaking in a way that it hasn't before. I mean, some of that I'm sure has to do with the schedule. You know, there were some comments on the schedule and like what people like, what people don't. But this feels like, I wouldn't say like a if not now when, but Notre Dame is not a program that I think is built to do what Georgia is doing or Alabama had done or USC had done in the aughts, where it just like every year it's just like a assembly line of five-star talent. Like Notre Dame is built to make a run every few years, but this is one of those every few years.
The other response that surprised me a little bit, and in a good way, number three, what would you define as successful season Notre Dame this fall? Yep. What's the minimum, and you emphasize minimum, you would consider a good year for the Irish? And 55.6% saying win one CFP game, which is good. I mean, I think I answered make the CFP just because I really like emphasize the minimum and I look at this season as a CFP or bust kind of campaign. But I think if minimum expectations are that high, that speaks to the overall health of the program.
Yeah, I would definitely be in the win. I wish that I had, you can't have too many categories in these, but like, I wish that I had written one of that was essentially like beat one power four team in the CFP. Because I think that if Notre Dame makes the CFP and then they beat Boise State or Liberty.
Back-to-back years.
You're just like, ah, that wasn't enough. So I think that they need to beat a power four team in the CFP to consider this a successful season to me. You know, I think Notre Dame's fan base, there was, you know, of, you know, multiple CFP games was 24%. You know, and that, does that mean two? Does that mean three? I'm not really, you know, it could be in the eye of the beholder there. But I do think, like, if Notre Dame goes 11-1, they host a game, they beat Tulane, and then they lose the next week to Oregon. Like, I don't know if that's
like when you put it in that,
you know, that's just like going to feel like, ah, like not quite. Like it would be in the gray area. It's like, I don't think that would feel like a successful season. I don't think it would feel like a failure necessarily. It would just be like,
Last year, right?
Ah, yeah.
Like they were better. They won 10 games.
This is a season that needs to feel like a success, no qualifications, no like addendums, nothing. Just like in 2012, wildly successful season. 18, 20, wildly successful season. You know, I think that making the CFP and beating a group of five team and then losing the next game would feel a little bit more like 2019 or 2021 or even 2006, if you want to go back that far. Notre Dame needs to have more than that kind of season. It needs to have a 12, 18, 20 vibe check at the end of it. And I think that's just like Notre Dame's built for that.
I don't know how you would squeeze this kind of question into a survey because it's predictive, but I do wonder, again, Vegas knows more than me and you and all of us do. They've got Notre Dame losing, or at least as underdog, to A&M, which I still find a little hard to believe.
Yeah.
How will whatever happens in that night, good or bad, kind of influence your overall view on the season? Like, they're what, 1.5-point underdogs? If they lose that game by one, say 21-20, and they go on, like, I just wonder, I just think that's going to be such a strong tone setter for both this team and for how all of us kind of consume this team throughout the course of the season, that, you know, you can't say it's a win a playoff game or win multiple playoff games or bust and then go out and lose the first game of the year, which, again, the experts, the advanced analytics, whatever you want to call it, say is going to happen. The schedule this year is just so weird to me, especially as we look at the expanded playoff where schedules will be more important now than before. Like, Notre Dame was pretty simple in years past, whether they designed it this way or not. Go undefeated and you're in, don't go undefeated and you're not. And that was probably independent of whoever they're playing in a given year. That was just kind of the rule, mm-hmm. the unspoken rules of being independent in a 14 playoff era. Now you're going to see 3-4 loss SEC Big Ten teams really try to say, look at us, look who we played.
Yeah.
I got asked, I was on Red Quarter, Blue Quarter on Stadium with Ohio State, Michigan is what the title of the show's for, with Joshua Perry and Jake Budd. And I did a Notre Dame segment on there, and there was a fan question saying, like, the schedule's terrible. When is Notre Dame finally going to play someone? And I thought, you know, that's a tired question year after year.
Yeah.
But I do think it's kind of appropriate for this year.
Yeah, I agree.
It matters this year.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that this year's schedule is not good. I think Notre Dame should be in and hosting at 11-1. 10-2, then I think you're getting into some, like, kind of uncomfortable territory that, like, if they went 10-2 against last year's schedule, it would be a no-brainer they'd be in. This year, I'm not sure. I mean, it's like, Ole Miss, I think, is, like, going to be one of those teams that probably goes 10-2 and is going to be, like, clamoring for, like, hey, we did this in the big bad SEC, even though we're not in the SEC championship game. Like, I'll just read their schedule. You tell me if this is better or worse than Notre Dame's. Furman, Middle Tennessee State, Wake Forest, Georgia Southern, Kentucky, South Carolina, LSU, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi State.
It's tougher, but there is.
Let's just say they lose to Georgia and LSU.
Yeah, but yeah, it's so funny. It's funny you bring them up because I was just reading something of them earlier this week, and, like, part of the pitch, if you will, to get behind Ole Miss, aside from the fact they have a really good roster, is for an SEC schedule, they've probably got it as well made as anyone this year. I think 10-2 with that schedule is getting in, though.
Compare
it to other SEC. Like, I have a hard time seeing a world where there aren't at least 3 Big Ten and at least 3 SEC.
Yeah. Well, LSU's schedule. They open with USC. Like, that's a legit game and a good point of comparison against Notre Dame by the end of the year. Then it's Nicholls State, South Carolina, UCLA, South Alabama, Ole Miss, Arkansas, A&M, another point of comparison. Alabama, Florida, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma. Like, it's definitely better than what Ole Miss is playing, and there's 2 points of comparison with Notre Dame. Like, I think that this schedule for Notre Dame, while it's, I think, kind of like very tepid, the fact that there's an SEC opponent on there is going, and a Big Ten opponent on there, which we can get into here in a second, but, like, that's going to make point of comparison pretty easy. And I'm not saying it, or 2 Big Ten opponents, I should say, thanks USC. There should be a pretty good way to compare Notre Dame and LSU without them playing. Less so Notre Dame, Ole Miss, based on what their schedule's like. But, I mean, heck, you could, it might come down to comparing Notre Dame and USC, even though they play head-to-head. But it's like, USC, they've got LSU, they've got Michigan, they got Penn State, they got, I guess, and Notre Dame, they don't play Ohio State. But there's, you know, Michigan and LSU and Penn State, those are all going to be like in contention with Notre Dame for bids, right?
Right. So, I mean, I'm looking up Texas's now because I think that's one where
they play A&M.
Right, but they play Michigan week two, and they also have a, from what I remember, a murderous. I mean, yeah, Colorado State at Michigan, UTSA, ULM, Mississippi State, Oklahoma, Georgia, Vandy, Florida, Arkansas, Kentucky, A&M. Yeah, I mean, I think it's easy right now in June to say we'll have points of comparison. It didn't do Florida State any good last year. They went 2-0 against the SEC in dominant fashion, but they were judged to be lesser than because of an injury. And, you know, there are all sorts of you know, extra factors that could be taken into account. They're already – those two conferences are already trying to stack the deck. And while I'm not knocking – like, I do wonder if this year – and we don't know how it'll play out. But my biggest gripe with the SEC every year is they don't play nine-game schedules.
Yeah.
And I think the Big Ten and this reconfigured Big Ten will have a much tougher path to get to the playoff than the SEC will because of those schedules, that extra conference game. Because even – in the Big Ten, you were capable of losing to at Iowa, at Purdue, or, you know, a team that, you know, isn't a quote unquote blue blood, because they're just there are a lot of good teams in that league. I think I'm sure you saw USC and Ole Miss just announced their two game series in the next 2 years is off. I imagine that has a lot to do with maintaining scheduling flexibility with likely 9-game conference schedules coming aboard. But I just think we've already seen throughout offseason talk of the Big Ten, the SEC trying to stack the deck with bids, with automatic bids. I just have a hard time seeing with all those big schools in both conferences, they're not being at the very least three teams apiece.
I'm with you. I think that they will.
Like Ole Miss 10-2 is going to depend where that ranks in the relative to other SEC teams.
More
than it would Notre Dame.
I think that Notre Dame going 10-2, as long as it's the right 10, like if Notre Dame went 10-2 and they beat A&M, like I think that they'll be in because they would have an SEC win. You know, if you sweep USC and Purdue, well, I mean, Purdue plays Oregon, Ohio State, and Wisconsin. Like there's some good points of comparison. I already mentioned the points of comparison that USC would offer. So it's like, is this schedule interesting for Notre Dame? It is not. However, with the expanded play, with the expanded conferences, I think you're going to get some more transitive property applications about who's ahead of whom and why. This is all part of like one of the I'd prefer college football go back to how it was 20 years ago. That's not happening as it is today. I think this is one of the more interesting parts about the expanded playoff is like you're going to, as long if Notre Dame has an SEC team and a Big Ten team annually, I think you have to accept those results if you're Notre Dame, good or bad, that like, well, we beat the SEC team that ended up going 9-3. That should carry a lot of weight. We swept the Big Ten teams that we played, and one of them played for the conference championship. Like then you should be ahead of those teams. You know, if we got a glut of 10-2 teams, Notre Dame's one of them, but they have like these transitive property wins, then I think Notre Dame should go.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I just think we're spending too much time looking at the top end and not the low end of this year's Notre Dame schedule. Part of like A&M's a great opener, USC is a great closer. They're playing four Group of Five teams this year.
Yeah, it's
two
not
MAC
good.
Teams, two AAC teams. Every team you just mentioned is not playing that many Group of Five teams. USC is playing 11 Power Five teams this year because they're opening with LSU and closing with Notre Dame. So I just think the bottom of the schedule could like. This is an annual exercise every year, but however good or bad Navy is in a given year, in the past, it was a tough game because it's tough to prepare for and tough to kind of adjust back to normal football the week after, but you don't get any extra credit for that. No one's looking at 6-6 Navy that lost all six games by a touchdown or less and saying, man, that was a tough game for Notre Dame. Good thing they beat them by 14. Like, I don't think they're going to get extra credit for that. I don't think they're getting any credit for Army.
Yeah, no, I sort of agree and disagree because I wonder, this is one of those things where like I'm not sure how the committee is going to view that stuff. If like, because in the past, I feel like with the top four, we only evaluated the top of the schedule. It was like, what's your one or two best wins? Like that carried the conversation. I think with 12 teams, because, you know, you're splitting more hairs, maybe the middle of the schedule will matter. You know, this is not a good middle of the schedule for Notre Dame, but in the future, and maybe this is a good pivot point to like the scheduling question that was in the survey about like, what would you change? Number one, people want the Michigan series back real bad.
10 more years, right? or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. It's coming. It's just around the corner when our kids will be doing this podcast. It'll be Sloan and Josephine on the Independent.
Help us.
But yeah, that's the Michigan State and Purdue. Like, I think those are pretty good middle of the road teams. I realize Purdue is like not in a good spot right now, but I still feel like beating Purdue, one, people will watch it. They can be good, ask Mel Tucker, or Urban Meyer, and it helps NBC too. So I think that Notre Dame's schedule, like we talked about this before recorded, like the 2026 schedule, like that's a schedule I really want to watch. 2024 is less so.
26 September, Wisconsin and Green Bay, Michigan State at Purdue, three Big Ten teams in at USC to close. So four Big Ten teams, I guess, that year. And I think they have two teams they still need to fill that year.
It's officially summer, which means it's time to get into Roback with 20% off for our listeners at The Independent. It's our go-to apparel on the course, at the lake, around the diamond, or even recording a pod. With polos, hoodies, shorts, and quarter zips, Roback has what you need to get active and stay active all summer long. And with football around the corner, gear up for those tailgates and watching the Irish in person this fall. You've probably seen Shamrock polos around campus already. Get yours. Listeners of The Independent can get 20% off your first purchase by using the promo code IRISH. Again, that's 20% off all hoodies, polos, quarter zips, and more at Roback on your first order with the promo code IRISH.
I know me and you have talked about this. I'm not sure on this pod, and this was reflected in the fan survey. Purdue, however good or bad they are in a given year, and even in bad years, we know that's a program that has slayed giants, has a habit of slaying giants in the past. What's the ACC equivalent of Purdue? I mean, I think outside of Miami, Clemson, and Florida State, you might want to play Purdue more than you would any other ACC team.
Yeah. Not only would you want to play them more than any other ACC team, the Notre Dame fan base would rather watch that.
Right.
Than any other ACC team. Like, we're discussing, like, if you're a Notre Dame fan and you said you can watch Notre Dame Purdue or Notre Dame versus ACC opponent X, how many ACC teams would you list before you would say, I'd rather watch Notre Dame Purdue? Clemson, Florida State, Miami.
Maybe Pitt in a given year, but I also think they've played them enough lately where it's just...
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for Pat Narduzzi, I'm not sure why that would be interesting. You know,
well, Chris beat him.
Yeah, right. Former Pitt coach, but it. I just think that the Purdue Michigan State, like, it will get people to the television. It will get people to the stadium. That's a win-win, and I think that it's. You know, I don't know if it helps you with scheduling for the playoff any more than like playing the ACC teams, but it definitely makes your schedule a lot more interesting.
I think so. And it's a game everyone can go to, or like it's accessible.
Yeah.
It's easier, yeah. Generally speaking. I know Notre Dame fans are all over, but it's easier for Notre Dame fans to get to Purdue than it is Raleigh or yes. Southwest Virginia.
Yeah. There's a lot of good things to that. So, I think
Boise as well. I don't know if we talk about that. That's an intriguing game for 25.
I like that. Yeah, I like that part of the schedule too. Like, if you're gonna have these one-off games, make them compelling for reasons of football. Boise State is a compelling football game,
and that's one where you're gonna need to regurgitate your Ohio State keep the red out article, because I think that entire state is going to.
Ooh.
Attempts to trek.
I mean, that's only 10,000 people, though. So, like, is it really that? Is that going to be a takeover situation?
I don't know. Look at some of their old big bowl games. I mean, that is a pretty passionate fan base.
Yeah, you might be right about that. But yeah.
One other note when we're talking about future schedules. I like when they're playing Michigan State, because I think they'll be a good program in 26 and 27.
Yeah. No, I think that's at that point, Michigan State should be back to at least kind of 8-4 type. Like Purdue, I'm skeptical that Purdue is going to get back to anything, but I think Michigan State should get back to being an opponent that, like, oh, okay, you can't like mess around and just expect to win. It should get some of its Michigan State craziness out. Get back to like more of the Mark D'Antonio, just like well-coached part of the schedule. Although by the end that got crazy too. I put this question in there because it was kind of a vibe check question. What do you remember most about last season? Like what game sticks with you the most? And I was pretty sure that Ohio State was going to win for like how catastrophic the ending was. But I was not prepared for Ohio State and Louisville accounting for 87% of what you remember most about last season in a singular game way. That summed up the Notre Dame fan base to me big time.
That's a coachy cliche. The losses, the wins never feel as good as losses feel bad, right?
Yeah. It's like at the time, that Duke game, you're like, wow, what a cool moment. Like less than 1%.
USC game. Rush the field.
Yeah, USC and Clemson were basically the same.
Problem is there's so many Bears fans who are Notre Dame fans. Like, oh, wait, we got to root for this guy.
Yeah. So that I thought was kind of interesting just in terms of what people remember most. You know, the NIL, do you feel better? It's the same or worse year over year? I don't think there's a lot of programs out there that would say 70% of their fan base feels better a year into it than Notre Dame's.
Clemson should do this fan base.
Yeah.
This survey.
Yeah, right. How do you feel about the transfer portal? The what?
What?
Yeah.
Did you see that Jeopardy clip?
Yes. It was Jeopardy so good. Yeah, that was excellent. I think the other thing, like, what gives you most enthusiasm or optimism about the season? I gave you three options. Mike Denbrock hired, Al Golden stays, Marcus Freeman returning for his third year, or I think the fourth option was Riley Leonard transfers in. Overwhelmingly, Mike Denbrock. I think that's because you want to get to the heart of like, okay, why are people as optimistic as they are? There are multiple reasons. I'm not saying it's one thing, but I would tend to agree that Mike Denbrock is the biggest of the reasons why you should feel good about what this season could be for Notre Dame.
I agree. I'm surprised Riley Leonard only got 2% of the votes, because I think those kind of go hand in hand. New proven quarterback, new proven OC coming together, one of whom, Denbrock, knows the place inside and out, and this is not going to be some kind of experiment or culture shock for him. He's called a lot of good plays before, but I mean, Denbrock was my vote, but I do look at Denbrock and Leonard as kind of like a package deal.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Trying to get what else. I put sort of an ACC question in there. It was kind of tied into conference realignment because like the Notre Dame joining a conference thing is something that we're going to be talking about until they actually do it. I'm not sure that will ever happen, but I'm always interested to get the sentiment that kind of changes year over year. More people were open to the Big Ten than I thought would be. That was sort of one of my takeaways from that. And some of that was there was a small group of people that would just join the Big Ten right now. But there was a much larger group that was like, all right, if the ACC falls apart, then make a move to the Big Ten. I did get a sort of a write-in suggestion from a subscriber listener that he felt like what Notre Dame really should do is pull up stakes on the ACC and go back to the Big East and then actually become independent in football again. That is, I think, worth considering as well. But I just think there's not a lot of, I don't get the sense there's a lot of like love for the ACC deal, the way it's constructed, from the Notre Dame fan base.
Well, it's because the games just haven't been great. And now we're looking at a conference in real time. I won't go as far to say collapse, but your two biggest brands are soon to get out, which is not a good sign. I think that Big East hypothetical sounds good in theory. I think in reality, basically scrapping your next 12 years of schedules and saying, all right, we need 12 games every year as every other conference is getting bigger and presumably expanding its conference schedules. I think that not that folks won't make room to schedule Notre Dame because we've seen them do that before. But, I mean, you look at 2020. Part of the reason they decided to join the ACC for a year was if we're independent, how are we going to schedule games on our own for a year? Now we're kind of projecting that out through multiple years. And I think that could get very, very tricky. As you see conferences get deeper, I mean, you know, there are reports of there of USC trying to get out of the LSU game. And I know there's some USC and Notre Dame fans who are worried about the future of their rivalry, although I'm told that that's on steady ground for now. Yeah. I just think you'll see more and more of that as these conferences get tougher. And that would make it harder for Notre Dame to schedule fully independent every year.
Yeah, I think that Notre Dame is just different in the sense of, like, scheduling is complicated, but teams are still going to want to play Notre Dame. Maybe it won't be, like, everyone all the time. And I think that would be true probably if the SEC went to 9 games. But I do think, like, if Notre Dame had to find a fully independent schedule, like, Purdue is not going to be like, I don't know if we want to do this.
But to do it every year and make sure, like, we just spent the first 30 minutes here kind of ripping this year's schedule, which they were in control of. To do that every single year, you can't just play 12 Purdues.
No, you can't. I think that you could find 2 ACC teams. I mean, you could go back, like, Stanford, USC, Navy, boom, 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 have those. Like, Stanford, who knows? They're not on future schedules right now. That was also, like, what would you change about schedules? Not playing Navy every year was the second most popular one, and then dropping Stanford was the third. So I just think, like, look, you could figure out a way to get a couple Big 12 teams, couple ACC teams, maybe 4 ACC teams, couple Big 10 teams, just rotate them around. You know, maybe you can only get 1 SEC team, but I think you can always get, you should be almost always be able to get one. I mean,
you're doing 4 ACC. I mean, it's,
yeah, we've got Georgia A&M to Florida to Alabama. Like, it's there, right? I don't know.
I'm just saying, if you're playing 4 ACC as independent, I think you're better off where you are now, where you're playing.
Yeah, it's really not that different. I think if I was Notre Dame, I think the most practical change I would make would be, like, we will continue to play Stanford, but only as one of our ACC games.
That might be,
it seems,
in the works.
Yeah, it feels like very tea leave-ish to say that that's where it's going, but it kind of feels like that's where.
No one said anything on any side, Stanford, Notre Dame, or ACC.
Yeah.
If you look at FB schedules, which is a really good job of having future schedules, Notre Dame has 11 opponents for 25. Stanford is not among those 11. I don't know if they know something we don't. But, yeah, I could see that. I do wonder, like, the Big East sounds cool in theory.
Like, it'd be fun for basketball.
It would, but, like,
not good for the other ones.
It wouldn't be good for the other ones. And even basketball would be fun, but, like, I think Notre Dame would have to completely reinvest in the way they look at their hoops programs if they did that. Just because you look at the current iteration of the Big East, which is only basketball schools. It's crazy how it's cool. It's fun. It's like old school the way that there's a conference that only cares about this. Yeah. So I think that would require rewiring in certain parts of Notre Dame. But I say stay as independent as long as humanly possible. But I think you absolutely need to do your homework right now if you're Pete Bevacqua on the ACC. If 5 schools follow Florida State and Clemson and sue to get out tomorrow, and then they all just collapse, like, holy cow, what are we going to do?
Bevacqua and Tony Petitti are close. I mean, they're both, like, from the same industry. It seems like the legwork ahead of time there would be pretty minimal. I'm like, hey, let's go out to dinner. What do you think about this?
Well, yeah, to join, yeah, I don't think that would be a chore. But, like, if you want to stay independent,
yeah,
outside the box.
Yeah, I just think the value of independence, while critical to the university, I think for football scheduling, as the Big Ten moves towards essentially becoming the AFC of football, you're on both coasts all the time. Like, it's the Big Ten, I think, is more palatable by the year.
I agree.
For Notre Dame to join. And it seems like the fan base sort of shares that sentiment a little bit. And I look, I, I really respect this third of people who are like, hell no, never. Because like, what is Notre Dame if not for like 100-year-old stories that, you know, of black balls and fielding Yost and Four Horsemen, all that stuff. Like, all that's really friggin' important at Notre Dame. So like, I'm down with that too. But I think if you just look around the modern landscape, like, hey, the Big Ten, like playing Oregon, USC, Penn State, Ohio State. You get that Michigan game back on there. You're going to Washington. Like, that's good.
Why do they keep Stanford on the schedule? To guarantee a West Coast presence every year.
Yeah.
Well, you could get that in the Big Ten, though.
Yeah, you got four options. One of them, you know you're playing at every, like,
right.
Play USC every year. That's a your protected rival. And then rotate through the other three. Like, I don't know if I want to go to Seattle at the end of November, but, like, once in a while is fine. You know, get UCLA in there. That's a fine trip at the end of the year. I don't know. I think there's some different ways to look at this if you're Notre Dame and you're thinking about scheduling.
The All-State 12. Join them.
Yeah. The All-State 12. I don't know if they're an official sponsor of Notre Dame Athletics. Was there anything else at the schedule that sort of caught your attention? You know, as you kind of run through the questions. Like, I think that, look, corner as being the biggest strength, obviously, offensive line being the biggest weakness, somewhat obvious there too. So breakout player, I don't know if you had a vote for there. I will say I appreciate the people that vote for Julian Love and Jordan Love. Somebody also voted for Jerome Bettis Jr. I didn't note that in the survey. So there are a handful of people.
Survey.
The number of different ways people spelled Boubacar Traore was incredible. That was... I wish I should go back and find all of them because they had to be at least a dozen different ways. But Jeremiah Love was the pun intended runaway winner there. Would you have voted for anybody else or are you sort of in the Love?
I'm trying to remember who I voted for. I might have voted for Snead. I did not vote for Love. I know that. And I would not have voted for Leonard because I don't think he really is a breakout player in the tradition.
I was happy only three people voted for Xavier Watts because that was just like he can't be a breakout player who's a unanimous.
I might have done Chris Mitchell, although I don't.
He got a handful of votes.
Does he count? I mean, he counts.
Yeah, he counts. I mean, if you do, like, I think whatever you did at a group of five level, that's not breaking out of the power four level.
Yeah, he'll be noticed when he does it this year.
Yeah, I think so.
I get it. So you said 40,000 words of championship celebration submissions, and I'm sure thousands of other words with others. What were some of the best ones, if you have them off the top of your head? What for championship, for Pavakwa? Because the Pavakwa one's interesting. I'm always curious how fans view what athletic directors do, because I think it's different at all 133.
Yeah. So I think on the Pavakwa point before the championship point, like I was struck by people have some real strong opinions on Swarbrick, positively and negatively. But I do think the comment that I included in the survey was what I thought was the most thoughtful of them was Bavakwa has to figure out a way to keep Notre Dame in the room.
Yeah.
And there was, I think there was a Ross Dellinger who does a great job reporting on all things like backroom dealings, had a story about sort of a meeting with Baker, with the NCAA, and then the four commissioners of the Power Four conferences. I think if that had happened 2 years ago, Jack Swarbrick would have been in that room too.
Right.
Bavakwa was reportedly not. Figuring out a way to get back in that room. And that's, I think that will be a challenge for Bavakwa. I think it's one that he will probably be up to, especially because the people who are running the conferences are much more like him than probably they were like Swarbrick. I think Bavakwa has a way, like he knows everybody, like that should make it easy. And I think that, you know, that was really one of the understated legacies of Swarbrick is like, he really got Notre Dame into rooms that frankly, they did not have business being in. Like he designed the new playoff, like that's, but you know, for Bavakwa to have that level of experience that I think really is sort of his first job. Like there were bunch of people like fix basketball, fix baseball. And I'm like, I get it. Those are important. Like extend Freeman. I'm like, okay, he'll get to that. But I think the most important thing is like building the relationships with the other conference commissioners so you can get Notre Dame can get back to be feeling like it's a conference of one.
Yeah, I think that's it really is a commissioner job in the more traditional sense. I almost wonder, and I don't know what his plans are, but there's the external relations with Notre Dame and acting as a conference commissioner, acting as a voice when it comes to playoff discussions, NCAA discussions, et cetera, et cetera. And there's managing the day-to-day. And I mean, look, we've heard from a gazillion people over Swarbrick's tenure, like if there was a shortcoming, it was that, right? He wasn't around and present on campus as much as a traditional athletic director would be. And I wonder how you strike the balance of that. But there's no questioning or mistaking what he did for the football program and athletic department as a whole. And I mean, you mentioned designing a new playoff. I remember in 2012 when they finally announced the 14 playoff, he was the guy who went up there. He was the face of that for all the commissioners and announced it in a DC ballroom saying, hey, we did it. We're done with the BCS. So I think that's the most important thing I think you have to do right now as a Notre Dame athletic director, if you're Pete Bevacqua. But to your point, he comes into it at a much higher floor than Swarbrick did. Notre Dame in 2008 was not what it is right now. And he comes into it with more, I think, more of a background of what the sport needs right now than Swarbrick did back in 2008. Yeah. That was a very unconventional hire at the time. Obviously, he did a lot of stuff in the sports world in Indianapolis. But ADs used to be like, all right, the football coach needs something to do when he retires. Barry Alvarez, you're the AD at Wisconsin. Yes. Yeah, Joe Paterno at Penn State, et cetera, et cetera. It was a very outside-the-box hire. And now look at the commissioners, right? Tony Petitti, TV exec, Brett Yormark, music exec, you know, Phillips and Sankey are a little more traditional. But all these guys have worked with Bevacqua in some sense before. And if you look at – if you do a Google Bevacqua, like the number of different – publications, everything from golf to politics, et cetera, where like you'll see stuff that he's involved in. It's pretty interesting. Like Cigar Aficionado did a profile of him. I don't think they're doing that of most commissioners or athletic directors. So I think he checks different boxes and is enough of a people person where he'll be able to make this right.
No, I'm with you on that. As far as like the national championship stuff, you mentioned already the gift basket for Baton Rouge. That was hilarious. I thought it was, I was struck by how many responses were like, I have a kid who's X years old and I was X years old the last time Notre Dame won a national championship. The sort of the multi-generational threads from a lot of answers where that was like, I want to celebrate this with my dad, but it's going to be bittersweet because he died 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And like, I'll visit the gravesite to, you know, spend time with him, commune that way. There's a bunch of Cubs references in there. I think it is pretty apt. I think it would feel that way for a lot of fans. Like the Cubs had gone on for so long that
right.
You know, it that had like five generations, like, There are a lot of Notre Dame fans who know what it feels like to win a national championship. There were no Cubs fans who did. So that's, but I think that sort of like being able to experience Notre Dame in a way that your parents did, or your kids being able to experience Notre Dame football in a way that you did, I thought that really sort of knit everything together. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, and look, every team, every college has some element of that. I think it's more profound at Notre Dame. There's a lot more legacies there. I think it's more of a family thing, so to speak, than it is at most places. It just is. You go to a funeral or a wedding of someone who went to Notre Dame, and whether they're playing the whatever the song it is they play at the beginning of kickoff with the woman, or
the Irish.
I guess it is Here Come the Irish, but they only started that in like 2012, I think.
Yeah. That's a relatively new phenomenon.
The Rudy music, whatever. Like different, in regards to Notre Dame than it is at other places. One other thing, maybe memory doesn't serve me well. I just looked at, I don't think you had any broadcast questions in there.
I didn't. I didn't on that one. I don't know. I'm like, I was, I think the last questions that I put in there had more to do with like conference realignment. And so I wanted to cap it at 20 questions, but you know, after the NBC deal, I think maybe it was like, I didn't have Under Armour in there either, which I did last season when people were like Nike and Jordan, please God. Just cause like the NBC deal and the Under Armour deals have been signed. But yeah, it's like, I don't know. I think people are just sort of like, well, NBC, the announcing pair is what it is. But
did you see that they're using AI for Al Michaels' voice at the Olympics?
I saw something about that. That
like my first thought was, why couldn't you do that, Mike Tirico, for Notre Dame games the last few years?
Yeah, you could finally have the Tirico Mayock combination that everyone has been clamoring for. But I do think there's a good section of the Notre Dame fan base that is like, well, I don't like X, Y, or Z about NBC, but they're paying Notre Dame a crap ton of money.
Yeah.
And if this is what it takes to be independent, I will gladly just roll with it.
Yeah, I just meant more of the broadcast stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's announced that Dan Hicks is coming back.
Yeah. They announced that a while.
I don't know if they announced it, but I know it's
been announced. I read it on The Athletic.
There you go.
So yeah, that's been covered. But yeah,
I liked him a lot, like as a broadcaster.
Hicks?
Yeah.
No, I think he does a good job. It's kind of one of those you associate various announcers with sports, right? Like, and I associate Dan Hicks with golf.
Yeah.
Which like I enjoy. Like they cut the US Open, right? Like
that sounds right.
That was really good. Like I loved watching that. And like, hey, that works for Notre Dame. He clearly knows Notre Dame incredibly well. That helps. You know, Mike Tirico, I don't associate with anything. I associate him with everything.
Right.
You know, it's like, so that, I don't know. I think it will be fine this fall. I think that Notre Dame fans for the most part with NBC are just like, okay, if this is what it takes to be independent, we're good with it.
It does feel different now that they're, they're re-upped and like they're investing in college football as a whole now.
Yeah.
It just feels, I don't know. It feels like they're more committed to it. I don't know if that's reality, but that's the perception as a viewer when I turn on NBC on Saturdays and you're seeing commercials for Big Ten Saturday Night and Notre Dame football and this and that. And it'll be interesting with when they add NBA in a couple of years too. They'll be all aboard.
No, I'm with you on that. I don't know. Was there anything else before we wrap up on the survey that stuck out or stuck with you?
No, I mean, it was a wide array of responses. It's a great reminder of why we spend all this time.
A reminder of why this podcast has an audience.
Yeah, it's cool. It means a lot of people, and it's always cool to read that in the doldrums of the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, we'll wrap up this episode of The Independent there. I'm Pete. He's Matt. We will probably be back in a few weeks. As you're listening to this, we will be in the month that training camp starts for Notre Dame, which is sort of like hard to get my head around a little bit, but we're into July now. So, and we'll be back multiple times, obviously during the season. That's our plan as it has been in the past. Hopefully we'll have a guest at some point before the season starts as well. But until then, he's Matt. I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Independent.